on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Good evening, folks. It's Damien Lawler here with you till 7 o'clock on Monday the 2nd of August. Coming up on Game On tonight, we ask Rory Best how the Lions can recover from their mauling by the Springboks. As the Hurling Championship comes to a head, we get Niall Moran's thoughts on another thrilling weekend. And after wins for Dublin and Tyrone, the Football Championship is still wide open. Darren O'Sullivan gives us his verdict. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, let's go straight to Tokyo and our team there. Gary Moran reports with all the latest news and reaction.
We'll start today with athletics. There were three Irish in first round action at the Olympic Stadium, and there were several finals as well. To tell us all about it, we have David Matthews, who competed in the 800 metres at two Olympic Games, and our athletics commentator, Greg Allen.
Yeah, indeed. Myself and David have been watching another final session here on the track, and it's been a really interesting evening. We're going to discuss that in a moment, David, but I want to reflect first in the morning because obviously some news has emerged about Ciara McGeehan having an injury going into her 1500 metres heat this morning. Now, Ciara McGeehan came here with aspirations of making the final. She made the semi-final in Rio. She did it very impressively and then had not a great semi-final in Rio. But here, the way that she had been improving through the season, running 4 minutes and 2 seconds, which is world-class time coming here. What happened this morning that left her in 10th place in 4 minutes, 7 seconds?
Well, from our position, we really don't know, but we can surmise, in fairness. Like, the expectation, when you're a double European medalist, your expectation is to make an Olympic final. That's the next step, okay? And then the next step is to get into top six. That, I'm sure, was her expectations and hope. Now, everything looked, the race unfolded, she got into a good position, she ran quite aggressively, which was excellent. So from early doors, we were going, yes, this is a very positive run by Ciara. However, as it started to, as the pace began to pick up with 300 metres to go, you could see she started to flail ever so slightly, and the pack started to move away, and she slipped from 6, 7, 8, and the writing was on the wall. There was no coming back from it. Now, it transpires later, we had heard, you know, that she had suffered an injury and was her training was seriously curtailed.
And that injury happened, we believe, last week in a session at the Irish holding camp, and that she wasn't really able to put any weight bearing on the leg, the injured leg, the calf injury until last Saturday. And you know, you're immediately thinking negatively about your prospects when something goes wrong so close to the deadline.
Yeah, I think the thing about here is this is the Olympic Games and the standard is so high. If you're not 100%, it will show, and it will show very clearly. And that is the problem. If you're carrying an injury, you haven't a hope. You cannot hide on this world stage because it's truly a global sport, truly global participation. And Ciara needed to be 100% to do herself justice.
Just a quick word about Sarah Healy in the other 1500 metres heat for women in the 1500 and also Phil Healy in the 200 metres. Phil Healy, fifth place. She came here really with aspirations of making the semi-final, and when we saw the draw we thought she's got a great chance, but it didn't happen. What was your analysis of that?
Yeah, she was, well, the facts are she was fifth of five, okay, in her heat. I think the exploits and the tremendous, you know, achievements that she was involved in with the mixed relay probably took its toll on her. She had two hard 400 metre relay legs in her legs, literally, and it told as she came off the last bend. You would normally see Phil pick up and drive on, and she looked somewhat lethargic, in my opinion, coming down home straight.
Sarah Healy, she's only 20, European junior champion back in 2018, and she burst on the scene winning the 1500 and 3000 metres, you know, as an 18-year-old. And now we know that she has an Olympics under her belt, but she didn't perform particularly well, and she admitted that the occasion got to her.
Yes, it was a great, really honest interview. You know, beyond her years, maybe. She said she wasn't happy, and she said that she felt that, you know, this stage got to her somewhat. Now, it's under her belt, and this will stand her in huge stead for 2024. The Olympic Games is a huge step up for our junior athletes. And, you know, that transition is the most difficult of all the things. I would have said, you know, she should be relatively happy with it, but more to come from her. She is a really bright future on the world stage.
So the other finals, actually, there was two finals this morning. Jasmine Camacho-Quinn took the women's 100 metres hurdles. Now, part of our coaching team is John Coughlin, who's the brother of Peter Coughlin, who was within touching distance of making the final of the World Championships in 1999 in the 110 hurdles. So John Coughlin's association with the winner of the 100 metre hurdles is a nice little Irish connection.
Well, I think after we've had that not a great day on the track here, we'll claim anything.
Yeah, and whatever Quinn part there is in Jasmine Camacho-Quinn as well, a fantastic long jump. Miltidis Tentoglou of Greece winning on campback with the second last jump.
Greg, the jumps have not disappointed us. Well, last night, Rogue Jazz, and today. Basically, the abridged version is the medals changed in the last round. Tentoglou was out. He then pulled an 8.41 out of the bag, out of nowhere, and took the gold medal. Qubit second and third.
Yeah. Just finally, Sifan Hassan this morning, 12 hours before the 5,000 metres final, falls in the heat of the 1,500 metres, picks herself up with 380 metres to go to win the heat. That was just superhuman. And we saw her win the 5,000 metres running away from the field. Another superhuman performance. She's going for 5,000 gold, 1,500 gold and 10,000 gold. Unprecedented in Olympic history. Can it happen?
It can, but it's going to be a huge challenge for her. The 5 and 10 has been done double before. Lasse Virren and Mo Farah, 15, 5,000, 10,000, never been done before.
And it could happen because the first leg has been executed because Sifan Hassan, the Ethiopian-born Dutch athlete, has taken the 5,000 metres in the one of the prime finals of the night, and Valerie Allman of America winning the women's discus on the very first throw of 67 metres 98. And that about wraps up what's happened here on day four at the Olympic Track and Field programme.
Now, Ireland were represented in two other sports today. After the final show jumping stage of the eventing, the Irish team of Sarah Ennis, Sam Watson and Austin O'Connor were placed eighth overall. O'Connor, riding Colorado Blue, qualified for the individual jumping final, where he finished 13th out of 25.
Look, I always felt the horse should be here. He more than deserved to have a place on the team. And look, hey, we're here. I think he's performed unbelievably. You know, it is the horse's first championship. So comparing to these last 10 horses, you know, he's still a year behind them. So I think it's a lot to look forward to.
Tell me about your two rounds here tonight.
Yeah, I think I had two very unlucky rails, to be fair. And I'd be my own biggest critic. Normally, I don't really, you know, might be jumping under lights for the first time, so on. But look, he had a cheap rail in each round, but he jumped his socks off and he felt really impressive and fresh.
In the 3 metre springboard preliminary round, Oliver Dingley, eighth in the Rio Games 5 years ago, didn't fare nearly as well this time, finishing 25th out of 29.
It's one of those things. I've experienced the highs and the lows of the Olympic Games. I feel a bit useless after that one. But at the same time, it's been a 5 years. I feel very proud to be able to stand up on that diving board, my friends, family, loved ones, and represent the country. So it's hard to take in a sport like diving where the smallest of mistakes in the air costs you. It really emphasises the mistakes, especially. So it's like a bit of a chain reaction. So it was a hard one to claw, especially after my second dive. Feel a bit useless with it, but at the same time, I feel very proud to get to stand there on a diving board. And the last dive, I tried to take it all in a little bit more and put a bit of a smile on my face.
Elsewhere, New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard, the first openly transgender athlete to be selected for an Olympics, came through qualifying but failed to record a valid lift in the final. In women's soccer, Canada beat the United States 1-0 in the first semi-final, and they will face Sweden in the decider. They beat Australia, also 1-0. And in women's hockey, there was a shock result that went the way of India, who, remember, beat Ireland 1-0 in the pool stage. Well, today they beat world number two side Australia, also 1-0, and will face Argentina in the semi-finals. For tomorrow, American gymnast Simone Biles will compete in the beam final, thus taking up her final chance of an individual medal at these games, where she has withdrawn from four other finals. Biles has not competed since last week's team final, where she performed on vault but no other apparatus before saying she wanted to protect her mental health. She won four golds in Rio. They didn't include the beam, though she has won three world titles on that piece of apparatus. For Team Ireland, Kelly Harrington boxes an Algerian opponent in the quarterfinals of the lightweight. heavyweight division. Andrew Coskren, 1,500 metres. Marcus Lawler and Leon Reid, 200 metres. And Phil Healy, 400 metres, are all in heats, while Bertram Allen, Dara Kenny and Keane O'Connor open their campaigns in the individual show jumping.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, you're welcome back. Now, the Ulster football final gave us a fair bit of excitement on Saturday, much less so the Leinster pairing a day later as Kildare and Dublin contested that decider. Darren O'Sullivan joins us to look back on the weekend's action. Good evening to you, Darren.
Hi, Damon. How are things?
Not too bad, Darren. Ulster final, firstly, I guess. Where do you think that game was won? Because it was tight enough for long phases in the second half, especially.
Yeah, it was, to be fair, firstly, the Ulster Championship has been amazing this year. You know, especially Tyrone, I suppose they've come out with a whole new approach. I suppose the winning in the game was probably down to the two goalies, the excitement they brought to it. But I just think it was Tyrone's nerve really that got him over the line, because I think even at half time they were saying that it was, I think it was Pat Spillane had said that it was a 5-point hammering. But Monaghan were just a bit sloppy in front of goals, I think, in the first half. They came out like a new team in the second half. And to be fair, it was a Tyrone nerve and their battle, really. Anytime Monaghan got within touching distance, they chipped down with another score just to keep him at arm's length. So, look, great credit to Tyrone. They've come up with a new style of play this year. I couldn't see them going that attacking against Kerry, but it was great to see it.
That's a lovely summary, Darren. Just to dig deeper into that then, you mentioned both goalkeepers, and it was the second question I had here prepared for you. Just the role of Niall Morgan and Rory Beggan, not just from restarts, but from open play as well, Darren. Can you just talk us through the tactics and the impact of both of those goalkeepers on Saturday's provincial final?
Yeah, I suppose I missed the start of the game, and I was just trying to keep up with it, and I see the white jersey running around, and I was like, what's the referee wearing? I was thinking, I was getting a bit confused by the whole thing. But they're just acting as an extra body. They're cutting out space where the opposition want to kick ball, but they're also an outlet. Both of them are very comfortable on the ball. Both of them are comfortable tackling, as we saw with Rory Beggan late on in the game. But they're just bringing the game to a new level, I suppose. For the last 15 odd years, we're talking about Cluxton bringing it to a new level, but I've never even seen Cluxton do this. They're both able to get around the field. They're both comfortable on the ball. They're just an extra outlet all the time, I suppose. If you're going man on man out in the pitch, it can be hard to get space. But if your goalie is comfortable, all of a sudden, no matter where you are on the pitch, you will have a 2-on-1 and an extra outlet to give a little give and go or a little pass. And in fairness to them, they're like two playmakers, they're like quarterbacks. They're able to pick out passes long and short. And just the extra dimension it's given both teams going forward was fascinating to watch.
You're known in your days for your skill and your speed, but you also know a bit about goalkeeping too. In your opinion, how much convincing would Rory Beggan have to do with Banty and Niall Morgan have to do with the two lads to get that tactic over the line? Because as you said, while you were getting your bearings, Niall Morgan had pushed up to one side of the middle third, which kind of ruled it out for a Rory Beggan kick out. How much work would have to go into convincing your management team that this could work?
You know, I'd say they're two tough bios. I'd say they'd go off on a solo run and do it themselves anyway. But do you know what? I think when you have goalies like that, and you can just imagine them before training when things are relaxed and you're kicking around and you're kind of messing and stuff, they both probably do a lot of football outfield anyway. And like that, I just think it upscuttles the opposition when you're looking up and you can see the goalie standing out around the halfway line. Both good fielders of the ball, obviously, as well. Both able to score. I just think it just throws the game and it throws the opposition off. So I think it's a bit of a masterstroke. There's very few goalies who can do it. They're probably the only two. I couldn't think of too many else that could do it. But like that, it's just bringing a new dimension to football. I just hope it doesn't come into club football. I don't fancy chasing a goalie back the field, never mind a couple of full back lines.
That was my next question. It's definitely going to filter down to the underage grades and it's going to go down to haunt you at club level too. Here's a question for you. If a couple of high profile slip ups come from the result of these lads pushing up out the field, could it result in the whole tactic being scrapped pretty quickly?
Yeah, look, it's risk reward. It's like, you know, when everyone started pushing up on the kickouts and they're going, look at the space they're leaving behind them. Once you have a goalie, Rory Beggan probably a prime example for that too, who can kick it over that press and you get caught, all of a sudden you start to retreat. Rory Began, obviously, we talked about the turnover he had and the way he chipped the ball up, but realistically, that should have been put in the back of the net and that would have put a stop to it. So that's all it is. It's risk-reward. They were getting the reward out of it, I think, yesterday. Both teams, they were both getting rewards off it, but one slip-up, one mistake, that's all it takes, and that plan is scrapped and it's on the scrap heap for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Tyrone, before we go into the Monaghan side of things, Tyrone just looked to be kind of finding their feet in terms of refining that game plan, Darren, and I'm just wondering, how hard will it be going forward to get their attack dimension sharp, but then look after the back with the likes of you coming against them?
Yeah, I think it was after the league game, which, look, you can't read too much into. I put out a tweet. I think I said, look, something along the lines of, where's the tough tackling Tyrone that wouldn't give you a second?
Non-existent.
And it was actually the Bomber tweeted back, championship's an awful lot different to league. But they really are fine-tuning. Look, I suppose, look, they're in their first year. And I think Sean Kavanagh mentioned it as well during the analysis, that it's the first time they've been kind of left the shackles off. Yeah. They're allowed to kick long and look for space. They've always, like, these forwards have been there for a while, but like that, it's been a really cautious approach. It's been more mind the house first. I cannot see them being as attack-minded and as ambitious and adventurous as they have been. It would be great to see, but I can't see it happening. They're a very smart team. They're not going to get caught in a shootout. So I think that's the most interesting thing. I don't think they can get it right for this game.
Wow.
Without going a bit more defensive. I don't think they can get their backline properly protected. No, Conor Myler, McGeary were doing a great job the last day tracking back, and like that, Myler especially, he kind of goes unnoticed a lot, but the amount of work he does for the team, gets on a lot of link play, and you know, you mightn't even notice it unless you're concentrating on him, but he's kind of one of the cogs that keeps the whole thing going.
Darren, that's an interesting point you make, because you look back at Tyrone over the last 10 years and, you know, they had a system and Mickey stuck to that system, and whether the players liked it or not, and you saw players like Sparky Bradley or Darren McCurry not always get in that team, Ronan O'Neill as well, that prototype forward. Suddenly, joint management team come in, they signal a new way. They're trying to find their way as we speak, but, you know, they've definitely let some players off the leash. Then they come up with a semi-finalist in the form of Kerry, who are potentially the most dangerous team in the country. God, I'm just wondering, how difficult would it be not to revert back to type, and could you actually get caught between two systems if the coaching methods aren't spot on in the next week or two?
Yeah, but I think that's the thing. I think they, whatever system they go with, they have to go with it 100%. And like you said, don't get caught between the two stools. All in all, if I was a Tyrone supporter, or a player even, I'd be delighted with how things are going. Again, to an All-Ireland semi-final, trying a new way of playing, you can see it. And the players are a lot more comfortable now. They're a lot happier. Like, I think most footballers will tell you, look, winning's the main thing. But if you're not winning and you're not playing an attractive style of football, what's the point? So you can see it in them. You can see it, all the players you named there. They're a lot happier. They look free. They're able to show their talent. I think it's going to be a massive decision for the management team which way they go. I just can't see it. I do think they'll drop an extra player back. They will keep as many forward as they can. I think it was more or less four of them stayed forward the weekend. I couldn't see four forwards staying up all the time.
Maybe two.
I think, yeah. I was thinking three. No, I think they'll want to stay on the front foot as much as they can, but I think three will be the number, and they'll drop three back, the likes of McGeary there, Conor Myler, and maybe one more.
Darren, before we push on to the Leinster final, where to now for Monaghan? Because great credit due to them for, with the emotion in that county over the past month, great credit to them and the under-20s for fronting up. And when they got their act together at half-time, you know, they did a Niall Morgan on it themselves with Rory Began. I think they'll feel they left the game behind them too, talking to a few of them. Where now for that project for Banty and these guys? Could you see them coming back again next year and just being just as potent?
Yeah, look, I just think, like, it's very, very rare that they don't get a massive game out of McManus. I think if they could get one or two extra bodies just to take the workload and the pressure off him,
yeah,
I think they'll go a long way. But like that, the first half, they will be kicking themselves. They had five or six wides in the first half that were all fairly similar. Probably wrong person in the right spot. And you put them over and it's a different game. They came over a second half. They probably gave themselves too much to do against a very strong Tyrone team, a very confident Tyrone team. But like you said, they will be disappointed, but I don't think they'll be too disheartened. I don't think they're going to think, where do we go now? They just need to have one or two bits of quality like that. The under-20s had a heartbreaking year, but there's a lot of quality there, hopefully, to come through and just give them an extra little push next year, a bit of freshness. We've seen it with Mayo this year. A few extra bodies, it can rejuvenate the whole team. So I wouldn't write them off next year. Benty gets the best out of them, and they're a very close-knit group. I just think that an extra bit of quality there to help out the likes of McManus, and they won't be far away.
Yeah, and the under-20 team look to have some good players as well. Not so sure how I broached the Leinster final, like 20 points, Dublin, Kildare 1-9. I've been hearing a lot during the year that Kildare were going quite well, a lot of foot passing, kick passing in training. I guess you can't blame them for maybe putting the shield up facing Dublin, Darren, but it was a pretty uninspiring game. Would you agree with that, and what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it was just, like, I suppose it's the way the Leinster Championship's gone for Dublin. It was a case of just doing enough. But at the same time, just doing enough for them is still kicking 20 points, which is brilliant, really. But look, we've come to expect so much from them. We don't think that's impressive at all. They never looked in trouble. They looked comfortable. They looked at their ease. They looked like they were going in second gear. It was fairly boring. But they're just doing what they have to do. And they're going into a semi-final against Mayo and a potential final or maybe final against the Kerry or Tyrone. And the three of them teams have something in common. They've all been beaten by Dublin in recent years. Yeah. And none of the three teams that Dublin could potentially play between here and the end of the year have found a way to beat them yet.
Yeah.
Like so many other teams. So for me, we still don't know a whole pile about Dublin on it. They do what Dublin do. They're patient, they wear you down, and they just keep chipping away at that scoreboard.
Yeah, because the narrative seemed to be, we're Dublin coming back into the pack. But Jack O'Connor came up with an interesting one yesterday. Are they just maybe nearing their peak again? So we don't know. What we do know for sure is the goalkeeper settled in quite well. Evan Comerford did okay. Their subs bench is certainly not producing the same impact as it once did. But it's up to everybody else now, isn't it, to put them to the pinner?
Yeah, my thinking, and this has been for a couple of years now with Dublin, is they aren't getting better because it's just not possible to lose the players they have and replace them with players that are as good. It's just not going to happen. They may be as good as them in time, but they're not at the moment. So they were never going to keep going up on this upward graph. But the thing is now, have the other teams now, with the Mayo, the Kerry, Tyrone, have we all improved enough to get up to their level? Start of this year, I would have put three groups. I would have had Tyrone or Dublin at the top, Kerry just below them, and then I would have had Mayo, Tyrone, Donegal just below Kerry. And look, it's come down to it. Have the three teams that could potentially play them, have they improved enough? I have a sneaky feeling for Mayo this weekend or in 2 weeks' time.
Do you?
Personally, I do. I don't know. Just, I like their energy. They've had this energy for a long time, but they've added freshness to it. I suppose they had some great soldiers that were soldiering there for 10 years, and they were just losing that bit of pace and that bit of energy, whereas they brought in lads now. They've kept the same style of play. They just have more freshness about them. They have a bit of more exuberance with these new young lads. I just think it's a funny year. I think this could be it for Mayo.
And it's gas because Killian O'Connor's loss seems to have got that bit extra out of the rest of the guys, and maybe Aidan O'Shea is playing a much more prominent role in the inside forward line this year than in previous seasons.
Yeah, and sometimes that happens. You lose your best player and other fellas kind of step up to the plate. They look like they're getting more and more comfortable as the games go on. A couple of new lads inside the forward line, and Aidan O'Shea is more prominent, especially in the second half of the last game. They were very direct, as we said a few weeks ago. There's not many going to beat Aidan, and if they can get that understanding right, they're going to be very dangerous. And they have pace, and we've seen that this year and every year. It's very hard to mark pace, and this year more than any other year, defenders have been asked to mark one-on-one, and they're not great at it. So Mayo, with that bit of pace, bit of directness that they have now, they could cause a shock.
Just last question for you, Darren. Looking at Kildare, the likes of Paddy McDermott, Alex Burney, Derek Irwin, all good young players. I saw Dan Flynn really, really just doing his spontaneous work, just going for himself. You don't see it in every team these days that a guy like him is let free to play kind of the role that he wants. What do you make of Kildare?
I think they're coming. They needed that game. Look, they'll go away out of it thinking they left a lot of chances behind. I think they're 6 or 7, yeah. I think it was, dropped yeah. short, which is just criminal. And they will go away from it. A bit like Monaghan going, geez, we left a great opportunity behind us. Other people say Dublin weren't up to scratch, but Kildare, they played well, but they left a lot behind them. But there's an awful lot for them to build on for next year. Like to Daniel Flynn, he's one of these special talents that you kind of do need to, you do your thing there and you give him a bit of special treatment. But like that, that kind of, that sets the rest of the team free as well. You know, that it's not all set in rigid team structure and stuff like that. You need a bit of fluid play, you need a bit of structure, but you need somebody that's just going to do something off the cuff. And that bit of class that he has. So it's been a positive year for him. They're on an upward curve. In fairness to Jack, he does get the best out of teams. And yeah. he will want to play attacking football, which is what Kildare people will want to see as well. So, look, I don't think anyone realistically thought they were going to beat Dublin. Mm. They by no means got beaten well or anything like that. And on another day, they could have chipped in another 5 or 6 points handy, and all of a sudden you have a different ballgame.
Darren, thanks a million. Really enjoyed the chat.
Cheers, Damon. Talk soon.
Okay, coming up after the break, we'll talk hurling with Niall Moran.
Game on 2FM.
Now, Waterford's Running Power and Cork's Hunger were to the fore last weekend as both counties accounted for Tipperary and Dublin. They're at it again next weekend in the All-Ireland semi-finals. Waterford facing the might of Limerick and Cork taking on Kilkenny. Niall Moran joins us to look back at the weekend's hurling action. Niall, I'll just go to Tip and Waterford firstly. 3 weeks on the trot and Waterford put on a thrilling display like that. How impressed were you with that?
Superb, Damien. To be honest, I thought they might have come unstuck. I thought Tip's stick work and a little bit extra know-how would have gotten them through. But I suppose, look, that third quarter in particular from Waterford, they're just awesome. Their running powers. And again, week on week, we've seen them grow in confidence. And again, it's probably the less heralded players, the Peter Hogans, Jack Prendergast, do you know what I mean? They're driving the thing on for them. So they'll definitely represent formidable opposition to Limerick on Saturday evening.
Yeah, they will, Niall. And just before we dissect the Waterford display a bit further, at one stage, John McGrath was true in goal, and was it Sean O'Brien got the hurley to him, Niall? And had that goal gone in, I wonder, as much as Tipperary were hanging on in there, could that have hurled nearly the greatest comeback in Tip's history? I mean, it was that close of a margin at that stage in the game. Would you go along with that, Niall, or am I dreaming?
Yeah, well, again, in recent history, I suppose the way the game went, it would have been a huge comeback. I suppose they come back for a lot of that fourth quarter, as in like they had even probably in parts of the third quarter they left an awful lot of chances behind them. And I suppose maybe if we look at it from a tactical point of view, Tip played with maybe two up front, and so maybe at this stage of his career, I'm not so sure that Shane McCann needed to be up front and chase shadows for a long period of the game. Yeah, so I suppose, look, maybe like Tipper playing maybe what they had, but I just really think in the fourth quarter there, like, their influence in Noel McGrath, he just made things happen out of nothing. He's just brain and his wrists were phenomenal. And in one way, it was a pity that John's second chance didn't go in, just to see really what would have happened with Waterford to come back. But really, the way in which he responded, primarily through Neil Montgomery, 1-2, like, it's really a sign of a team who are growing in confidence and probably maturity as well. Would Waterford teams in previous years, would they have fallen apart? Quite possibly. So that's a testament to where they're at, especially given the amount of guys that they continue to miss.
Niall, you know more about it than anybody in the take and trust of Intercounty Senior Fair, and along with your brothers, I was watching it on the sideline, and what impressed me most about it was just when Tipperary might have got away or got out of a ruck, or the ball might have gone into Tipperary hand, just the flick of a hurl to take it away from them again, to refuse to give up the tussle for that ruck on the ground, just so impressive. And it's dirty work and not many people would have seen it, but like the ferocious intent there for 75 minutes. Any real reason why they're tying that together a couple of years after maybe, I suppose, not producing it in the championship, Niall?
Well, I don't think it'd be fair to say that they weren't producing at the end of the day. They were in All-Ireland in 2017. But, you know what I mean? It wouldn't take the whole pile for them to get over Galway that day. And I know, look, a couple of years following that, they were probably disappointing from a Waterford point of view. But
that's the period I meant, yeah.
Yeah, this is still really a kind of golden crop of Waterford players too, because this is still the core of the group that won All-Ireland Minor. You had a couple of All-Ireland colleges came back to Waterford, and you know, different to us in Limerick, like, they expect huge things from that group. Really, I suppose, like what you're saying there is the aggression, the honesty, like that style of Waterford play. It wasn't just swashbuckling going forward. So yeah, like, that was just like, so that's reflective of Liam or whatever. But one of the key things to me, or they're a little bit different to most teams, is that they're starting with the lighter, quicker, faster guys, and they're finishing up with kind of bulldozers, like the size of the guys they brought on there. Again, Neil Montgomery was brilliant, like Joe and Mikey Kiley, all big, strong men who were able to win their own ball coming down the home straight. And ultimately, when a game goes down the home straight, it goes back to basics, winning core, primary possession from puckouts, and tactics go out the window. And that's really where Waterford will be different to other teams. And like their bench made a huge impact again. And you know, so like they're definitely a huge opposition for Limerick to be worrying about. And look, 3.25 from play, 13 scorers, like, and you know, Stephen Bennett, who you said was carried in the previous games, you know what I mean, he was probably one of the quietest of the forwards. So that's to tell you again that do you know what I mean? Like, they're really a team on the up. Probably the one thing I would be critical maybe of Tipperary is that they didn't really go at their full back line. They kind of gave them a soft ride. And I think the one lesson that could have been taken out of the Galway game was when Galway pushed up, Waterford were under a bit of pressure. And my hope and my expectation would be that Limerick would put them under pressure in the full back line. And let's see what they're like defending from a little bit further deeper.
Yeah, I actually asked Liam Cahill about that, because Jamie Cannon ghosted in for two goals early on, and Liam said himself, Niall, he would like to have seen his team tip on from there, maybe produce more of a threat. You've answered my next question with 3.25 from play. I'm still struggling to get my head around that. That is just phenomenal, really. You know, from a team that may have been looking for place balls in previous years to get those big tallies up there, can they produce it now, a fourth weekend on the trot, Niall, against the very best that's out there?
They'll find it difficult. I honestly think they'll find it difficult. Like, Croke Park is a big pitch and it plays very differently, to be honest, to Thurles and Cork and to Park Creep. I suppose one of the things even for Waterford did last day, I was like, that was Waterford's first win over Tipperary in the last seven or eight meetings. So like, the belief from Waterford that they will win won't be, do you know what I mean, it won't be lacking. But I think really the Mark Limerick card from below in the league, and if anyone remembers that fixture, it was a kind of a tempestuous enough fixture. Waterford won it 122 to 21 points, but Limerick had two people sent off that day, and I think even the last sending off that day was Kyle Hayes with a brawl underneath the stands. Yeah. And you know, I think maybe they really Mark Limerick card for them, and I say it might, a couple of memories of that begin to resurface in the Limerick camp if they're short on motivation.
I know you're not going to call anybody's future, and I certainly wouldn't want you to either, but just your observations from the end of that game. And I know from seeing a few of the guys were quite emotional, and there was always that narrative going in there, the last dance and the end of an era for Tip, and maybe there could be a change in management, but who knows. Just if there was to be a few players moving on, Niall, I mean, the legacy of that Tip team over the last decade, it's fairly impressive, isn't it, no matter what way you dress it up.
Yeah, they're a golden generation. Like, I suppose, look, you have to look at, do you know what I mean, the pleasure of Maher's, you know, Shane McCallan, and these guys, Noel McGrath, like, they are absolute, they're phenomenal, they're legends. Like, even to this day, as I spoke to earlier on, like, the feeling of, like, Clark Maher the last day, the finishing of Shane McCallan, the touches of Noel McGrath, what Brendan Maher's done the last 3 or 4 years, like, they have a lot of miles on the clock. But the one thing that people are very quick to call is, okay, the majority of them are pitting 33 or whatever else, but it's not just the miles on the clock that you need to judge here. Like, on Saturday, like, you could still argue that Noel McGrath was still very influential, yep, even though he was operating off his wits. Park Maher still hurled, you know, I did a lot of hurling there for you. And like, maybe the things that might stop these guys coming back may not necessarily be hurling related. It might be just their stages when life is moving on from that they want to pursue other things. And but if they don't, like, there's still a place in the transformation that Tipperary team for some of them. Now, again, if a new manager comes in, he might have a say in that in terms of what dynamic he wants in the dressing room, because these guys will still cast a shadow on any newcomer trying to put down their place. But look, if they do decide to ride off into the sunset,
they owe nobody anything. They're really one of the most golden generations of Tipperary hurlers. And even on a personal level, they're all very, very strong characters, great guys. But I wouldn't be ruling them all out, and I wouldn't be sweeping them all out with one brush just yet. Like, as I said, you have to judge it on some of the performances, and there's still a little bit left, albeit in different capacities for some of those nights.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what the management intend to do with their 3-year terms up, see what they intend to do, and then see what the reaction to that news is then before we go any further with it. Just to switch over then to the Cork-Dublin game, Niall, I was impressed with Cork. I still think there's more in them. But more importantly, what do you think? Do you think that Cork have more in them taking on Kilkenny this weekend? And what impressed you most about their win over Dublin at the weekend?
Yeah, I suppose, look, when you're talking about the meeting of Limerick and Waterford, to some degree you're talking about new money. When you're talking about meeting the Cork and Kilkenny, you're talking really about old money. Yeah, and yeah. The one thing from my experience of the Cork managers that we had here in Limerick was every day they stood into a dressing room, they couldn't understand why you hadn't, not necessarily why you had the ambition to win in Ireland, but why you hadn't the innate belief to win in Ireland. And like, if you have Kieran Kingston, Don McGrady and the Rock Sullivan, Ger Cunningham, these lads, they're not saying, Jesus, isn't it great to be in the semi-final getting back to Croke Park? They're going up to play Kilkenny saying, do you know what I mean, we have a super chance here. So look, okay, looking at the game itself, I don't think it was ever really in any doubt. Cork were 8 up at half time, Dublin launched a comeback in the third quarter, and Cork still finished out by 8. Again, there will be a huge amount of concern about the fade out in the third quarter, which often is referred to, again, you hear it every day about the championship quarter. But again, they were outscored by Dublin by a point, and against Clare in the previous week they were outscored, and if they do that against Kilkenny, they'll be wiped. And if memory serves me right, going back to the 19 quarter final when Kilkenny won it by what? They won by 7 points.
Yeah.
But in that period, in that third quarter, they were outscored 8-0, and that's where Kilkenny won the game. So that would really be the testament to this Cork team, how far they've come on.
And that
they can just get through that period.
And that Kilkenny team will never put the foot off the throttle. Just as regards the Cork setup, then, Tim O'Mahony burst through maybe in the first half, Niall, and maybe in previous years he could possibly have put that ball over the bar. Everybody's going on about their tendency to go for goals this season, but is there anything else development wise in their game that you notice?
Well, look, again, like they have stood firm to what their belief system was in terms of puck outs, in terms of working the ball through, in terms of carrying, and they're playing to the best of their ability. I suppose, look, Robert Downey coming back into it, he's been really, really solid.
He has, yeah.
Again, like, he took his opportunity when Damon Callahan went down. Jerry Mellor has come on. Look, they're a very, very different side. They have huge pace. So one of the things about them is, I know it's the last day of the amount of lads who are Kitogues. There's 5, if not 6, of the Santin team the last day were Kitogues, and they sometimes present a very different proposition to an opposition. But look, they have a huge chance against Kilkenny, because this aren't Kilkenny team of the past. But yes, this is the Kilkenny team who won this year's National League and won this year's Leinster Final, and will have a huge belief that they too are the best team in the country. So I really think, more so than Saturday, I think Sunday's game will be a really fascinating game. Do you know what I mean? And I suppose one other thing as well, the other night, Damien, was James Owens. He had a fine game, and John, we were all very quick to criticise him and the mistakes he's made, but I'm glad for his own sake that he came back and had a wonderful game there as well on Saturday.
Yeah, well said. And Colm Lyons, you know, the penalty was a talking point for sure, but he had a great game as well, I thought, you know, apart from that, in terms of the advantage as well and letting the game run. So it's important to point that out. Dublin Niall are disappointing to watch. I mean, that's my own opinion. What do you think in terms of, when I say disappointing, you always feel that their progression should be more steadier and more consistent, and that maybe they should be achieving more?
Yeah, it's a hard one to call, because look, again, like, the performance in the league was, they're a mile off, and in fairness to Matty Kenny, they came out with a great performance against Galway. The last day, like, as in, they just didn't seem to really have enough top class stickmen. I thought they're a little bit out of their depth. I don't know enough about the ins and outs of it. I know, look, they have some super hurlers. Like, Donald Burke is one of the best finishers in the game. Jerome Hayes, great pace. Danny Sutcliffe is an awful lot of hurling done. Liam Rush. But I just, maybe there's not enough of them. And again, for Dublin, again, look, they've had a lot of underage success in recent times. They'll be very well organised teams. But a little bit like the Tipperary winning in the underage, I don't think they've had a number of top class quality players at the one time. And again, like, they had a very good guy, Matty Kenny, very good setup, very good coaching system. So if they do move on, it won't be an easy fix for whoever comes in after them.
Niall, just watching sport at the weekend, is watching the Lions playing the Springboks, watching maybe the Ulster football and Leinster football, and I suppose in hurling it's become maybe a little bit prescribed over the past season or two. Some people would say that's not necessarily a bad thing whatsoever. Just in terms of general sport and, you know, in your job as well, Niall, I remember when you were teaching, you were staying back after hours to coach Harty Cup teams and put in a big shift like that. In general terms, in sports coaching, is there too much coaching going on at times, do you feel? Is every play systematic nearly, and is the spontaneity almost gone out of it? And you can apply that to hurling as well if you want.
Look, I suppose my own experience of it, Damien, is that I just see it even at club level here. The time that's been put in, the level of detail that training sessions are going to, like you see it there yourself, you're back at home at your own club, you're on, even with underage. Number one, it would nearly turn you off coaching, to be honest. Really what's gone into it. You would really want to be sacrificing enough for that to get involved. But again, look, I wouldn't be turning around saying the spontaneity of it is gone. Like we've seen pieces of the magic, the Tony Kellys, what they did, Tim O'Mahony, Kyle Hayes, what TJ Reid does day in, day out. But I suppose, look, the level of coaching has gone up a notch. And really, look, some of the games this year in hurling have just been phenomenal. If we're to look at the actual art of coaching across the sports, I suppose, obviously, with more technical analysis, more money, more investment, players expecting a kind of a greater impetus from management. I think maybe the issue that you're going to find at ground level in years to come is that lads, managers, the coaches, they may not just commit to it.
Because
do you know what I mean? The sacrifices that they're putting in are phenomenal. And a lot of times, unless you're the winning team at the end of the year, it's all in vain in some cases, like, you know.
Yeah, and I find you become obsessed with it. Every waking moment, even through the management WhatsApps or whatever. But anyway, it's something that's been there for a long, long time. A final question for you then. The hurling landscape as we go forward, Niall. It could be very interesting the next few months because, like, Davy Fitz stepped aside from Wexford at the weekend, and you'll be watching maybe certain counties to see, you know, is there any movement in and out? Just in your experience, Niall, as a player, when it came to post-season or your team was knocked out of the championship, did it take long to stomach that disappointment and maybe get a break before you channeled your energy for the new season ahead?
Yeah, I suppose one of the things here, Damon, maybe when you're out of the loop in terms of playing, you're probably not as privy to what goes on in dressing rooms or what the dynamic of it was. But look, I know in our case we went through a tumultuous period there for maybe a decade where, to be honest, most of the conversations after games revolved around what players wouldn't be back and who the next management would be. So, I know in our own county landscape, the stability for, and no different to any other county, stability is key. I know irrespective of what happened, the Saturday the Walsh would be doing their level best on Anthony and Cal. You know what I mean? There's a lot of counties. They'll be doing their best to keep on to guys. But look, the landscape is really positive. I think this is, like, the hurling championship, like, you've seen the games that are there, they're very hard to predict. Even the weekend's matches, they're really hard to predict, like, you know. And yeah, you might argue that Limerick is slightly better than a couple of teams at the moment, but compared to the dominance that Kilkenny held in the, like, the last decade, Limerick are not next nor near that.
Yeah.
Like, so, look, it's just brilliant. And the biggest pity, Damien, is that the Olympics will be over and the hurling championship will be over at the same time and we're all back to school. So,
we may
as well enjoy the next 2 weeks while we can.
Okay, on that fairly levelling note, Niall, look, a great chat as always. Really enjoyed that insight. Thank you so much, Niall Moran. Yeah, you're very welcome back to Game On. Now, just a TG Carroll Ladies Gaelic Football Championship Series results to give you. Mayo beat Galway 115 to 111, a tight game there. Dublin 212, Donegal 27, with Carlo Rowe scoring 2-3 for Dublin. What a player she is. And Dublin and Mayo join both Cork and Meath in the TG Carroll Ladies Gaelic Football semi-finals. Now we'll segue to rugby. Warren Gatland is set to roll a selection dice for the Lions series decider this weekend against the Springboks. Changes in the back three and back row look to be very possible after defeat in the second test. The Springboks outclassed the Lions at the set piece, breakdown and in the air to keep the tourists scoreless in the final 40 minutes and win 27-9. Former Irish captain and line Rory Best joins us now. Rory, what, in your opinion, turned that game in the Springboks' favour?
I think they were incredibly physical, and especially in the second half, where they got a hold of the game. They got their scrum working, they got their maul working, and Yeah, I think it's such a bizarre game when you compare it to 7 days previous, which had a similar feel about it, just with the opposite way in terms of the team's performance. So I definitely think that the Lions struggled to get field position, and South Africa looked like a team that knew their back was against the wall and knew that they had a point to prove from last week.
Rory, just watching the games, even growing up and even seeing characters like John Bentley way back through the tours and obviously Keith Wood and these guys, and the excitement, the drama, the hero worship you had for these guys, would it be fair of me to suggest that this particular series has not caught the imagination like ones of yore?
I think to be fair to them all, you know, it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
I think the great thing about the Lions is it's the crowd, it's just sort of sea of red. You hear everyone talking about the atmosphere that builds around that, and actually, when you're playing against South Africa, it's actually going to the likes of Johannesburg, playing at altitude, you know, all of those little things that these boys haven't really got to experience. And, you know, it has been a very different tour for those many reasons. And I think then, sort of by proxy, that has made it feel like it maybe hasn't had the same drama or the same grip on it that the previous ones have had. And look, it's been a bit of a shame from that point of view. I do think that the way both teams go about playing their rugby is, it sort of turns it into a massive arm wrestle.
Yeah.
And whichever team gets on top and dominates generally wins the game. And that's the way they've both been set up, and that's the way they've played.
Criticism then in the media, Rory, and I mean, that's nothing new in the professional game, but like basically columns asking the teams put on a show here, that there is life beyond winning and losing, and where's the entertainment? Just what would be your response to that?
Professional rugby, and like first and foremost, it's about the result. I think if it turns into another dire game and the Lions win and their Test series winners 2-1 in a few weeks or a few months, people will have forgotten that exactly what the game looked like, and history will tell you they won 2-1. That being said, I would like to see. I think the way to beat South Africa is actually to go and play, to be brave. You have to play these passes, to play fast. Obviously, field position and your set piece is very important against them, but you would just love to see them trying to move it one more channel out. There's a couple of opportunities on Saturday just to try to get around this defence, and they didn't do it. They sort of hesitated, went back inside and sort of went to a bit of a squeeze game.
And would you feel then that, like, the behaviour of Razzy Erasmus and maybe the activity on social media and the videos that he put forward, somebody made the point, Rory, that all of that was designed to take the focus off his team and let his team play on rugby. What did you make of that build-up on his behalf, and did it work, in your opinion?
I think the result would suggest it did. It did work. They probably got a few tough calls, went their way. A couple of scrum penalties they got, probably more so versus the Lions. But any time the Lions get a little bit of dominance, the referee reset it. I think it massively took... anyone talked about all week was Razzy Erasmus. No one was really talking about the players. And when you're in South Africa and there's crowds and you beat them for 7 days or whatever it is between test matches, that South African team is under incredible scrutiny, but that wasn't the case. Didn't seem to be the case. And so from that point of view, in terms of management of your players, I thought it was clever of Razzy, if that's what he was attempting to do. But I sort of think that a lot's been made of the points he made around the referee and all of that. But I suppose ultimately, 7 days earlier, the Lions had done the same thing in regards to TMO. So I think you can't on one hand do it and it works, and then on the other hand, when the opposition do it, you can't then complain too much about it. So I think it's all a bit of a show, a bit of a sideshow, and it's about the players and how they front up this weekend.
You toured with the British and Irish Lions twice. From your perspective and your insight, how long will it take to turn the switch on the mentality of that game, Rory, and actually try and put it behind you and get focused on the third series?
I think the thing they'll have to do now is actually allow that performance as much as anything. The result, you know, is kind of obviously a byproduct of the performance. But you've got to, when you lose and you're trying to manage a team and get a team ready for the following week, I think you have to allow them to be annoyed, you know, and they will be annoyed with that. They look back and they will be chomping at the bit to get going, to get a reaction this weekend. So I think it's important that they reflect on it quite hard, but then now we'll also be having to go, right, well, how do we win it? How do we get everyone back on page now to make sure that tactically we're ready, so by whatever it is, Thursday lunchtime when they train for proper train for the last time, that they've everything banged on so that they can spend the next sort of 48 hours making sure that physically they don't allow to what happened on Saturday to happen to them again this weekend. Because if you're playing South Africa at any level, never mind in South Africa, and you lose some of the physical confrontation, you're going to really struggle.
And Rory, would that include some of the aerial tussles that you know the Lions struggled in, losing 11 out of 22 of the high balls that came their way from the Springboks? Is that one of the urgent areas that needs to be addressed?
I think it gives them field position. South Africa, all of a sudden, from the first test where they looked, especially in the second half, like a tired team because they were constantly in their own half, they looked like a team that was finishing the strongest because they were constantly in the Lions' half. And that, as a forward especially, you know, you're always moving. When you're always moving forward to things, you have a spring in your step. That's what South Africa got on Saturday massively. So the Lions are going to have to figure out a way. It's not just about winning that aerial, the catch in the air, because South Africa go up one-handed from time to time. It's about being smart around that. You know, how can they run with kind of escort lines better to not give South Africa free go at the ball, to give the Lions back three a little bit of protection? And if they're not going to catch the ball clean, can the Lions get enough people around the ball to get the bouncing ball, those sort of 50-50s everyone talks about? It didn't look like 50-50s on Saturday. South Africa seemed to dominate a lot of that. So that's a couple of big areas. It's not just as straightforward as going, let's put somebody in there that can catch the ball better, because that's, you know, you're talking about top level rugby. They're all quality in the air. And I think there's a few tactical things that they can do better. I think certainly from a selection point of view, like, I would be looking at someone like Liam Williams coming in, maybe even Josh Adams in that back three, and just sort of a little bit of an influx of energy in there, because I think after the weekend they're going to need that.
Ronan O'Gara suggested four changes in his team, Rory. You're bringing in Liam Williams and Josh Adams. What will they give you going into the third test that maybe the team hasn't had last time around?
I think someone like Josh Adams he has scored tries in this tour. He'll bring energy. He'll bring that kind of, you know, he's been looking at two games feeling that he was very, very unlucky not to get a run out. So he'll bring that energy and he'll go looking for work. He'll chase hard. He'll chase back when they don't have the ball. And if you give him a chance, he scores tries. I think his record in a Lions jersey, but also in a Welsh jersey, suggests that. I think Liam Williams just brings a lot of experience. He's played, he was sort of one of the players of the tour last time around in New Zealand. He had a really, really strong tour and test series. And he'll bring a bit of counter-attacking ability, that bit of smarts, but whatever. He also brings physicality in terms of when he goes up for the ball, he kind of clatters into everything and clears things out. And, you know, he generally comes away with the ball, and look, he's a very, very classy player.
Ian McGeehan mentioned that you go for it now. You put your game winners on. Rory, in your experience of Warren Gatland, how many changes do you feel he's likely to make? And could we expect much more creativity, as the words you mentioned, for this third test?
I think knowing Warren Gatland, it'll be, if everyone's calling for a lot of changes, he'll not make too many. If everyone's calling for no changes, he makes a pile of them. So it's hard to know. It's hard to know where he goes from here. He'll have an idea of who's performing well in training, and what direction he wants to go. I would love to see him starting Dan Bigger and Owen Farrell at 10 and 12, with Robbie Henshaw moving to 13. I just think that gives you a better kicking option. It also gives you creativity. It takes a bit of the pressure off Dan Bigger himself and Robbie Henshaw, because it felt like Robbie was having to do a lot of carrying, also trying to make a lot of the plays as well when Dan Bigger was maybe caught up with the bumper up. So I think it gives you a great opportunity to go for it. And I think that would be with a couple of big changes. I think it would. It's hard to know what to do up front. I think that certainly it would be bringing Ian Anderson onto the bench. I think when you're carrying a shoulder like Alman Jones has been doing, I couldn't understand why in the first test you didn't have your next best second row on the bench. And, yeah, and having guys that cover like Tadhg Byrne is great. But for me, the Tadhg Byrne is a six at the minute on this tour, the way he's been played. And Ian Henderson is the second row, and I would probably carry them both on the bench.
The argument has been made, Rory, to have six forwards on the bench, so that's a strong enough argument too.
Yeah, totally. And I think it gives you, I think especially in that second half, it cried out for a bit of just size and power and strength, in especially in the front five. The front five got exposed a little bit in the second half, and I think that someone like Ian Henderson would have done that. I'd love to see Tadhg Byrne getting more game time at six. So Courtney Laws has been good in the two games, not taking anything away from that, but you know, I think that, you know, that's about 60 minutes, maybe even 55, you know, to get Tadhg Byrne on and let him get into the pace of the game, or potentially start him this week, because he has been very, very good in the tour as well. It wouldn't shock me if Warren Gatland brought in Toby Faletau as well.
Would you think so?
I think that it wouldn't shock me. I think it'd be very, very unlucky to Jack Conan, who I think has played well. But I think that Warren Gatland, in these sort of scenarios, he sort of reverts back to what he knows and what he trusts. And by and large, that's the guys that have been on tours before, or some of the Welsh players, because he, you know, he just knows them more intimately than the other nations. So it'll be really interesting to see what he does. Like I say, it wouldn't shock me if he didn't make too many changes, but he certainly has. The beauty of the squad being so strong is that he has a lot of options at his disposal if he does want to change things up.
Interesting, because it leads me to the question that I don't have to ask now, because you answered it, but the Irish perspective. You mentioned maybe Jack Conan could be vulnerable there, or Henderson going on the bench. Just to our final question then, Rory. The approach on at the weekend, I mean, I suppose it's up to Gatland to pick the right team, get the right bench. It's up to the players to come out and enforce it. Just if you were to summarise the key changes and the key redirections that you'd love to see to beat these guys at the weekend, what would they be?
I think I'd love to see the Lions playing rugby, playing fast. You know, I think with the nature of the players they have, they're going to be physical, they're going to be pumped for this game. I think you're going to get that. I would just love to see a little bit more urgency. I think it's, you know, you're getting someone like Connor to get into the ball, and it's almost like the tactics are to get it to slow down because we're box kicking. It's almost like if we box kick everything in our own half. I'd love to see someone like Connor given a little bit of freedom to just go and play, put pressure on everyone else around you to speed the game up, because he does that better than a lot of scrum halves in the world when he's given the freedom to do that. You know, he's such a good player that he will slow the game down if that's tactically what the coach wants. But maybe to make those couple of changes in the back line with Josh Adams and Liam Williams and Owen Farrell coming in and really going after South Africa and putting pressure on. Lions never got a chance in the second test to put pressure on their conditioning, because South Africa never allowed the game to get out of their control. They just kept everything set piece, one out runners, balls in the air, and put the squeeze on. I'd like to see the Lions try to cut loose a little bit, because I ultimately think that's how you beat South Africa.
Okay, what a fascinating insight there, Rory, in fairness. We'll hear from you again next Monday night, but Rory Best, thank you so much for your time.